6:45, which is describing the glories of Lord Shambhu, Lord Shiva. Shiram yata dadivikara vishesha yoga sanjayate nahitatak pritagastiheto yakshambhutam apitata samapetikarya govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. So in the purport Bhaktisanta Saraswati Thakur, he explains different points about Lord Shiva, which may, if someone minutely studies the purport, they may have some questions, because our previously acquired knowledge may not resonate with what we perceive upon reading this purport, or you say agree. So in the purport, it explains that Lord Shiva, or Lord Shambhu, that he's engaged in creation, maintenance, and destruction. So then someone might say, oh, I thought that was, you know, Vishnu, Shiva destroyed and Brahma created and Vishnu maintained. So there's some, the acharyas explain how he executes these three roles in the material world. So it says that he destroys. It says, how does Lord Shiva maintain the material world? Because generally we think that Lord Vishnu maintains the material world. But it's described here in the purports by Jiva Goswami that one way to maintain the material world is to maintain religious principles. Because the material world will exist peacefully and happily for the majority of people if religious principles are maintained. Which means that the population will be engaged in yajna to please the demigods and supreme lord. And there, in response to that yajna, they will give proper rain, heat, sun, seasons, temperature, all the desirable things that we want for our happiness in life. So Lord Shiva, he's involved with maintenance of this material world because he kills the demons and explains that they say that he helps the maintenance of the material world by destroying demons who harass the universe. And the way he does that is through his able consort. In other words, how does Shiva kill the demons who disrupt the peace and harmony of the universe? And in one sense, disrupt the maintenance of the universe, the peaceful maintenance of the universe. So Lord Shiva, he maintains the universe by killing these demons. And how does he do it? By the expansion, his beloved consort, who appears in a not-so-beloved form of Kali Bhairava. Kali Bhairava is one form of Durga, his wife, who specifically that expansion is for killing demons. And you may have seen her. Kali means she's black, and Bhairava, I don't know what that means, but she usually see this form, really wild-looking lady. And she's totally black, and her eyes are like flaming cinders, and her tongue is sticking out. It's about as long as the tongue of a cow. A cow's tongue is about that long. And it's just going, she's sticking out like this, and it's flaming red from drinking all the blood of the demons. And in her hands, she'll have a few heads in her hands, and, you know, chopped off heads of demons and swords. So this is a very ferocious form. Just like sometimes you see posters with Govinda in the center playing his flute, Govinda Madi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami, and surrounding him on all four sides are paintings of the Das Avatar, Meena Sharir, Kurma Sharir, etc. So in the same way, as there's 10 forms of Krishna, or unlimited forms, Ananta Rupam, but 10 major Das Avatar, there are also 10 different features and forms of Durga. And Durga herself is not black. Her name is Gauri. Gauri means golden. She's like Radharani. She's very golden in color, fair and whitish. But she shows this black form, this ghastly, scary form, to help Lord Shiva maintain the universe by annihilating the demons. We see that in fifth canto of Bhagavatam, in the story of Jad Bharat. He was going to be offered to Goddess Kali, and it was Kali Bhairav. By the dacoits, by the gundas, or the bad people, you could say, the demons, asuras, and they were going to offer him, and then that deity split in half, and out came the real Kali Bhairava. I mean, deity is also real, but the original form of Kali Bhairava came out and with all her assistants, and they had a wonderful party there. And you see the party is depicted in painting form. You see all of her lady assistants, her, not exactly her manjaris, but her sucky assistants, because the word sucky means friend, sukha means her girlfriends, her female associates. They're having a big festival of drinking and fighting and drinking, cutting off their heads and holding them up, having a little tomato juice for lunch, so to speak. So this is how Lord Shiva maintains the universe, by his energies. Actually, how's anything done? It's done by energies. So Shiva is a Shaktiman in one sense, and his energy or his consort is Durga, who displays one of her features, the destructive feature, to destroy the demons. So then, of course, he destroys the universe, and that's also through his expansions as 11 Rudras in cooperation with Ananta Shesh, which we'll hear about if we get to that verse. Then it also mentions in the verse how the last part talks about the 50 attributes of Jivas. He has all of those in a great measure, plus 5 more. So attributes means gunas or qualities. As we know, Krishna has unlimited qualities, but 64 are listed as the beginning and as a good understanding for the Supreme Lord. And Vishnu and Narayan have 60, and special personalities like Shiva and Brahma, they can exhibit 55 to some extent. And then we, Jivas, we can exhibit 78% of the qualities of the Lord, which comes out to be 50 qualities. So the 5 additional qualities which Lord Shiva has, in a good measure, but nothing compared to the Supreme Lord, Narayan, is that he has a changeless body. He possesses a Satchitananda body, at least in his form as Sadashiva, and is changeless. He's always in the spiritual world. He's always existing as Sadashiva. He's all cognizant, which means he knows the feelings of everyone, and he's ever fresh and Satchitananda, and he possesses all mystic perfections. Obviously, Lord Shiva possesses all mystic perfections, because his worshippers, they often approach him because they want a mystic perfection. Brikasura, in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, he worshipped Lord Shiva because he wanted to have a mystic power that anybody touched their head, it would crack in half. So if Lord Shiva didn't have this power, then he couldn't give it to his shishya, because that's the way it works. Whatever, if you have something, you can give it to someone else. If you don't have it, you can't give it. If you come to me and ask for $100,000, I can say, I can give you $100,000, but it may not be the kind of $100,000 you want. And say, what do you mean? I say, you sit down. You sit down here for, you have a whole day, I'll give you $100,000. So yes, I have some time. All right. You sit here and listen. I'll chant 64 rounds. 64 rounds is 100,000 names. And 100,000 names are worth millions and millions and millions of times more than $100,000. And if by chance our chanting is pure, then after hearing 64 rounds, maybe you'll give up the desire for $100,000. And then you'll accept that same wealth, and you'll say, yes, I want that same wealth that you have. And I'll say, all right, you chant 64 rounds a day also. And you'll become a lakpati. And when you're a lakpati, then you'll have the singular and rare privilege to make something for Lord Chaitanya, and he will come and take it from your hand personally and eat it in front of you. Because he explains in Chaitanya Bhagavat that he personally eats from the hands of a lakpati. A lakpati means one who chants 64 rounds a day, not one who has... It also means, in the material sense, a lakpati means the father of many rupees. The father of many rupees, or the Lord. Pati means Lord, or master, or father, or husband. So lakpati means the master or the Lord of thousands and thousands, or at least 100,000 rupees. Then crorepati means million, over a million rupees. So Lord Shiva, he has all mystic powers, and he, because he's an expansion, ultimately Lord Sankarshan. So there's some interesting pastimes about Lord Shiva, because I thought I would just add those, because when we hear the glories of someone, we hear about the glories of their name, form and qualities, nam, rup, gunam, but we can't forget the lila, because that's where everything becomes expressed. The static definition of an entity involves the name and the form and the qualities. The dynamic definition of an entity has to describe the activities or the pastimes. So the dynamic expression of an entity, when it applies to the Supreme Personality of Godhead or His eternal associates, when we talk about the ecstatic dynamism or ecstatic interplay of all these four qualities, then you have lila. Once in Kailash, Lord Shiva was in a great ecstatic mood, and he started dancing with great euphoria and ebullience, and he was kicking up his heels, so to speak, and raising his arms, and he was chanting Gauranga, 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 over and over again. And Parvati had never seen him in such a mad form, except for annihilation of the universe. Not only mad, but extremely happy and joyful, and just bubbling over with happiness. And she asked him humbly, "Who is this Gauranga? Why are you chanting this name Gauranga?" He said, "In the future the Lord will come, Radha and Krishna will come together, and will bind together in one ecstatic form to distribute their own prema, and they will come to the earth planet, to Navadvip, and they will display such wonderful mercy and such beautiful pastimes in this unified form of Mahaprabhu, and he will be known as Gauranga, Gauranga." So she said, "Oh, I've never seen. I want to see that form." So Parvati came down to Navadvip, and she started doing austerities on the island of Simantadvip. It was, I don't know if it was named that then, but anyway, the island's called Simantadvip. And she was doing intense austerities, and she was also chanting this name, Gauranga, 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 Gauranga. And the Lord, being very pleased with her, even though it wasn't time yet for His advent, He was very, very pleased with her chanting and her tapasya, her devotional austerities. Then Lord Gauranga came to Simantadvip, and He manifested Himself before Parvati, Lord Shiva's divine consort. And then she was overwhelmed with appreciation and gratitude and loving feelings, having that wonderful darshan of the Lord. So she lowered her head, and then she took some of the dust from where he was standing, and she put it on, and she honored the Lord by taking that dust from under his feet and putting it on the topmost part of her head. The substance from the bottommost part of the Lord, she honored that by holding it on the topmost part of our head. Just as we come to Vrindavan and we do prakrama of Radhakund or Vrindavan or Govardhan and Barsana, and we will pay obeisances to the holy land of Vrindavan, and we will take the dust of Vrindavan and we'll put it on our heads and we'll wear it there as our most worshipful object. So she did the same thing, and then Lord Gauranga benedicted her that she could take part in his pastimes during Kali Yuga. So then Parvati and Lord Shiva appeared disguised as brahmanas during the Gaur Lila. But then actually there was some small dialogue that took place. Bhaktivinoda Thakur narrates that. And then Patita Pavan Gauranga, he asked Parvati, "So what do you want? Why have you performed all these austerities? Why did you come here? What do you want?" And she said, "My form is Mahamaya," which means Durga, this Maya, illusory energy. I have to imprison those who are against you and those who are averse to you in this material world. But by this service, I am always forced to remain outside of the spiritual world and your pastimes. And without you, I have no hope." So then after that, she took the dust on her part. And then Lord Chaitanya, and then that island became known as Simanta, Simanta Dweep, the island of Simanta. Simanta means the part in the hair, like a lady's, some ladies have the hair parted, you know, in the center, like that. So it's called Simanta. So then he told her, he said, listen, Parvati, as Yogamaya, you are non-different from me. And without you, I cannot perform my spiritual pastimes. So in the spiritual world, you're also serving me as Purnamasi. And in Navadvipa, when I come to Navadvipa and display my pastimes, you will serve me there as Protomaya. Protomaya is one form of, it's like the guardian Shakti of the Navadvipa Dham, Protomaya, and Kshetrapal Shiva are there. There was another pastime. The Lord Shiva was in Kailash, and he heard that in Navadvip, on the island of, Madhyadvip, island of Madhyadvip, which is the island of remembrance, Smaranam, Madhyadvip, he heard that thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, that Suta Goswami had come there. Suta Goswami, long, long, long before Lord Chaitanya's advent, he went to Madhyadvip and Navadvip, and he starts Lord Gauranga and his pastimes and leelas. Just like Valmiki wrote the Ramayana millions of years ago before Treta Yuga even came. Before Ram even came and had the pastimes, Valmiki wrote about them because he had that mystic vision. So in the same way, Suta Goswami came to Madhyadvipa and he spoke this Gaur Bhagavatam. So when Lord Shiva heard that, he said, wow, they're speaking the Bhagavatam. There's a Gaur Katha. Gaur Katha going on in Madhyadvipa. I have to go there and attend that function. So he hopped on his Viman, his carrier, who's known as Nandi, a huge bull, right? And then he was flying through space from Kailash, but bulls don't fly so fast. They're a little slow, as you may have noticed. If you've seen bullock carts here and there, usually you can walk faster than a bullock cart. You'll see a bullock cart on the path when you're doing Govardhan Parikrama and you'll go walk past it because they're walking too slow. And it's not very safe to walk behind a bullock cart for different reasons. So then Lord Shiva was going in on his bull, so then he thought, well, I'm not getting very far very fast. So as we know, Shiva Loka is far beyond Brahma Loka. So when he stopped in Brahma Loka to fill up his tank, fill his gas tank up, fill Nandi's tank up with some fresh grass, he had the brilliant idea, well, why don't I trade Vimans here with Brahma? So he asked Brahma if he would mind trading Vimans for a few days, like you trade cars with your father or something, you know, and give him your old junk and take his new car for your date or something. So so Lord Shiva, he asked Brahma, he said, can I borrow your swan carrier? Because he flies like supersonic speeds, and I have an appointment. I have to get to Bhagavatam class on time and hear the Gaur Bhagavat, so I don't have time to fool around. So Brahma, being very kind, he said, sure, go ahead, take him. So he hopped onto the Hamsa, the swan carrier of Brahma, and it's very comfortable ride. So in the middle, there's the two wings there, like a jet plane. Well, in the middle of the wings is where all the seats are, just like a regular 747. There's two wings, and between, in the middle of the wings are all the seats and all aisles and everything. So right there, it was like one big soft seat. It was just made out of swan feathers. Like sometimes people make pillows out of feathers and cotton and different things. So you can imagine how soft. So he had a full-length executive seat. So Lord Shiva, he just put his feet out like this, and then he just laid back on the swan carrier, full extension. He just slept. He went to sleep comfortably, and he came all the way down to Madhyadvipa, and he attended this function. But as he heard the Gaur Bhagavat, as he was hearing the wonderful glories of Lord Chaitanya that would soon be displayed upon this material world in the island of Madhyadvipa and Navadvipa. Of course, it's not the material world, but at least in this appearing, in this manifesting, the spiritual dham of Navadvipa manifesting within this material world, he was overwhelmed with intense feelings of separation from the Lord. He wanted to see these pastimes that he was hearing about.
Just like you may hear the Bhagavatam and develop a desire to see the pastimes that you read about, or not only see and take part, but to serve those pastimes and to assist the Lord and his associates. So in a similar way, Lord Shiva became very keen and eager to see the Lord, and because of his separation, he became very feverish. Sometimes that happens. If someone's anticipating a very joyful and exciting event, he may even develop a fever out of separation from the imminent happening. So he did like that. So then this pastime took place, and to commemorate this pastime, a deity was made and a temple was established. And that temple in Madhyadvipa is called Hans Vahan. Hans Vahan. Vahan means like carrier, I guess, and the swan carrier, Hans Vahan. So this particular deity there on Madhyadvipa, it shows Lord Shiva lying down. He has five faces. He's Panchamukh. He has five faces, and he's lying on the swan carrier, and it's a big black stone made of black granite because thousands and thousands of years old. But this deity, because Lord Shiva is so much burning up in this fire of separation, Viraha Agni, that the deity is kept in the lake. It's called Alakananda. Alakananda Ganga, which is under a big banyan tree nearby, not about 1 kilometer from the temple. And he's kept in a big lake there for all the year, except for Chaitra Mas. Chaitra Mas is right around now, or maybe next month, April, May, March, April, around this time, a little bit later. And Chaitra Mas, he comes out for 3 days from the lake, and he goes to his temple and has darshan, and everyone bathes him with coconuts. And he's a very special deity because if you have a desire, you have a particular desire, and you offer him a flower, if that desire is going to get fulfilled, he will throw the flower back at you. Which is, there are some different deities that have special functions. There's a Pananashringa deity in Vishakhapatnam, I believe, where you offer, if you offer 1 liter, he's a stone like a Shila with a big mouth, Ugra form. And you offer in his mouth a liter of sugar water, gore water. It used to be some kind of nectar, and then it was sugar cane juice, and then now it's just water mixed with gore, raw sugar. This sweet water into his mouth, you offer 1 liter, then he'll give back a half a liter. If you offer 10 liters, he'll give back 5 liters. If you offer 100 liters, and Shila's only this big, so you don't know where that goes. Shila's this big with his mouth, and you can pick out the Shila. There's no pipe going down to a reservoir or anything, or there's no empiric explanation for it. But it's like that. So this Hans Vahan is one of those kind of mystical, Lord Shiva showing one of his mystic potencies there. So you offer a flower and you put it on the deity of Lord Shiva, and the flower goes poof, like it's shot from a slingshot. It comes flying back to you, and then you hope that hopefully you had the proper desire, because Lord Shiva is giving an indication that will be fulfilled. It doesn't happen to everybody, but sometimes it happens. So then last year, we've gone there and done puja sometimes with the devotees from the temple. So last year, he goes, when he's moving around for 3 days, he gets on the boat, and he goes in the Ganga. I mean, everything's by boat, basically, around there. He gets on a boat and goes in the Ganga, and he visits different temples. For what reason, I don't know. It's his pastime. But somehow, it may have something to do with the size of the donation that particular temple gives to the pujaris. Because it's not really described that that's part of his leela, but that's what he's doing in these contemporary times. For those 3 days he goes, and the whole time he's being continually bathed and carried on a palanquin, and they set him down near that temple, and so many people bathe him because of this heavy heat, and the only way to relieve him is always bathe him with water and coconuts and coconut juice. So we heard that he was coming to the temple in Mayapur, somehow he was induced. So a big arrangement was made, and he came up the river, but then at the last minute he changed his mind. He went to some other temple across the river in Navadvipa. So then all the devotees that were preparing to receive him, they all ran across, got in boats and ran across the river and greeted Lord Shiva on the other side of the river. And there on the bank of the river they have a nice mandap platform, which is always there, And it turns out that it's always there waiting for Lord Shiva to come and receive service there. So he was there, and then we all got to go and worship him and like that. So once Bhaktivinoda Thakur, about 100 years ago, 120 years ago, he was wandering through the Navadvip, and he was in great ecstasy remembering the Lord's pastimes and chanting Harinam on his beads. So he came to the island of Rudradvip, because one of the Navadvip islands is called Rudradvip. It's named after Lord Rudra. So this particular island represents a friendship, serving the Lord with a friendly mood. In other words, that's on the platform of Raghunuga Bhakti. It's not possible in Vaidhi Bhakti. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Padasevanam Arshanam Bandhanam Sakyam Akhanam Vedanam. So the last few limbs of Bhakti are referring to Raghunuga Bhakti, and of course they're all overlapping to some extent. But it's not possible for one in Vaidhi Bhakti to have a friendly mood with the Lord. It doesn't, because there's too much distance from the Lord. But at any rate, this particular island, Rudradvip, represents the Sakyam, serving the Lord in a mood of friendship. So Lord Shiva had many pastimes there in previous yugas, and it's considered that Rudradvip is not different from Mount Kailash in the spiritual world. So this is the place where the 11 Rudras, which are, they have the U, their bodily complexion is a mixture of red and blue, which is kind of what most people look like when they get really angry. When people get really angry, they kind of become red in the face and blue in the face and like that. So that's the color of the Rudras, which Bhaktivinoda explains. And so they're always they come to this island in Rudradvip, these 11 Rudras, and they turn blue and red and they dance wildly, stunned in ecstasy for the pleasure of Lord Gaurachandra. And many great sages like Ashtavakramuni and Dattatreya, and the five-faced form of Lord Shiva, they gave up their philosophy of impersonalism when they came here, and they engaged in meditation on the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he came to this island of Rudradvip, and he fainted. And the reason he fainted, because he met one goddess there, one lady there, and she was the personification of impersonal liberation. She was the embodiment of Suyujya Mukti. She was Suyujya Mukti Devi. So that would be an interesting name if someone, guru, gives you that name. Suyujya Mukti Devi Dasi. That's not something desirable by the devotee, Vaishnavas. So then, he met her and she was talking to him and trying to, you know, asking why everybody gave her up, and she was complaining that everybody comes here and they give up this idea of impersonal liberation. So as soon as he heard the word, when he introduced herself, who she was, Suyujya, then that's such a horrible conception and such a disastrous idea for the heart of the Vaishnava. As soon as he even hears the word Suyujya, that he'll simply faint in astonishment. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he just fainted. When he met this lady, it just was knocked him dead. He fainted on the ground of Rudradvip. Then what happened? When he woke up, in front of him, he saw Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva was in front of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he was dancing wildly, and he was screaming, bum, 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 bum. If you ever go in a Shiva temple, and you see the Shiva worshippers when they offer the dahi, yogurt, or milk, or Ganga Jal, then they say, bum, 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 bum. And other times they also chant, because that's the mantra for Lord Shiva. Then after saying bum bum bum, Lord Shiva started singing, "Oh Sri Sachinandan, oh most merciful one, please give your mercy to all living entities and drive away their fears." Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he mentions that in his bhav, Navadvip Bhava Taranga, which are the waves of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's bhava, which were crashing over his mind and heart as he toured the land of Navadvip in that ecstatic mood of surrender, and in which he compiled this book, Navadvip Bhava Taranga, as a sequel to Navadvip Dham Mahatmyam. It's his personal experience. Like one is, there's practical knowledge and realized knowledge, or theory and practice. So the practical knowledge is the Navadvip Dham Mahatmyam. It's the Mahatmyam, the glories of Navadvip, and the Prikama, Prikma Kanda, which teaches you where to go and what happened in each of the islands. But then there's the realization of all of that, the actual seeing those leelas and experiencing those personalities. And that Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself showed. He wrote the Praman, he wrote the Navadvipa Mahatmyam, and then he experienced it and realized it. So in his realized state of bhav, while he was on Rudradweep, he offered this prayer to Lord Shankar, to Mahadev, Lord Shiva. I will fall at the feet of Mahadev, Lord Shiva, and pray for my own purification. Being merciful, Lord Shiva will place his feet on my head, and he will teach me essential truth. Lord Shiva will say to me, Krishna Bhakti is the essence of life. All endeavors for karma, gyan, yoga, and mukti are completely useless. By my mercy, you will quickly conquer Maya and attain the shade of the lotus feet of Lord Gaura Sundar. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura ki Shankar Mahadeva ki. So that's the conclusion of verse 45, the glories of Lord Shiva, Shambhu. Are there any questions? Parvati, you see, these names are interchangeable. Depends on our actions and our... In other words, Parvati is... Like Parvati, before she got the name Parvati, her name was always Durga or Sati. And Sati gave up her life and her father... And her father's Jagya, and Daksha's Jagya, because Daksha insulted her husband, Shiva. So she burned up her body in what they call the Sati rite, or sacrificing her body. And then she took birth as the daughter of the Himalayas. And in that birth, in that appearance, the name for mountain is Parvat. So the daughter of the Parvat, or the daughter of the mountain, is Parvati. Right? So... But that's all. And then she again became reunited with Lord Shiva and again became his consort. So we can say Uma, we can say Usha, we can say Parvati, we can say Durga. Many names she has. According to her, the relationship and the particular pastime that you want to convey. No, that's Kali, specifically that's Kali Bhairav. You can say that's Durga, you can say that's Durga, but Durga's specific form is Kali Bhairav. Durga is basically the general name of... When we refer to Lord Shiva's consort, we say Parvati. Just like Radharani, generally we say Radha and Krishna. But we can say Priyaji, Priyatam, Lali, Rai, so many other names are there. No, that's the whole idea. She's doing the work. He's sitting in meditation. If he has to manifest a form to be like that, then that's not the point. It's just like if I have to manifest a form and cook my dinner, then what's the point of having a wife? I mean, I'm supposed to go to work all day and make money and whatever. I mean, traditionally, and then so I have my works to do and I have my form and my works to do. My wife has her form and her works to do. So I have to come home and, because she manifested a form to go in the kitchen and cook, and so I have to manifest a form and go in the kitchen and cook too. Well, what's that? I mean, that's, you understand? And they had their, like, permanent forms and temporary forms. Like, within Krishna are unlimited forms, but his permanent, eternal form as Swayam Bhagavan is there. But then according to the needs of a pastime, another form may come out of him. He kills all the demons in Braj Leela in a Vishnu form. Just like Putin and all these other demons are killed by the Vishnu group that comes out of Krishna, then goes back within him and becomes invisible to the Brijvasis. Because he's a Sarva Avatari. So, Parvati to execute the will of her husband or order of her husband, she'll manifest appropriate forms because that's her service. Any more questions? Yeah. One Shiva, Sarashiva, is an expansion of Lord Sankarshan. He's Vishnu Tattva. He's an expansion of Lord Sankarshan. He lives in the spiritual world on the spiritual planet and is an expanded form of Lord Sankarshan for pastimes. But then that form, or you could say that form, Sarashiva, he expands into the world in a material counterpart, who's Lord Shiva, who, because he has contact with the living entities, and he has contact with Durga, and he has contact with the modes of nature, is considered to be an adulterated or polluted or contaminated form. That's the aspect. So that aspect of Lord Shiva is considered something like Jiva Tattva, but not really Jiva Tattva because he's not quite Jiva, so they call Shiva Tattva. This aspect of Shiva functioning in this material world is Shiva Tattva. Is that your question? Or? No. Well, the two Shivas aren't joined. They're two separate personalities. No. Just like we'll hear when we talk about Lord Shesha, which maybe in a couple of verses, not the Shesha. But when Lord Shiva destroys the material world, the Lord Shiva that is residing on Kailash, which is on is a mountain on Kuvera's planet in the material world, Kubera is a devotee, Lord Shiva, so Lord Shiva agrees to live there on Mount Kailash, just like in Nepal there's a Mount Kailash. Kind of reflection of that. So he lives there with Parvati on Mount Kailash, but when it's time for destruction of the universe, he cooperates with Anantashesha. Anantashesha is the expansion of Sankarshan. So Anantashesha, his expansion of Sankarshan, he annihilates the universe by burning it all up. A fire emanates from the mouth of the snake, the cobra, and he burns up everything, and then so he goes into a partnership. Destruction of the universe is a partnership between Anantashesha and Lord Shiva. The Lord Shiva enters into that partnership with the 11 expansions known as the Rudras. So he's always enjoying with Parvati, sitting on his lap, chanting Hari Ram, Hari Ram, meditating on the Supreme, or speaking Bhagavatam. But then he expands himself into these 11 Jivas. There's 11 Jivas. The Rudras are completely, they're not Shiva Tattva, they're 11 Jivas. And they combine with Anantashesh, who burns everything up, and then they dance in the flames, and you crush everything down. It's like sometimes you see in these kind of wild rock concerts that they have like pots of flame, or it's actually like this jelly type stuff. And they put the pots around and nobody can see them, and then they light them, you know, the stagehand, the lights are out, and the stagehand comes and lights them all, and then there's flames all around, and the band is playing in the middle like this at the last, on the last scene, and there's huge flames and everybody goes wild. I know about some of these things because my brother used to do these kind of light shows and stuff for big groups in the West. So I think they get these ideas from the Bhagavatam or something. They read about the hellish planets and about ghosts, and then they try to dress up like them and act like them and behave like them. And thank you very much for your kind attendance.